Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 62 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and joining us, as always, is my co-host to the left, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, we are going to take some time and talk in great detail about Sire Denathrius, the final encounter of Castle Nathria, and in particular the mythic version and what we think of it. And no spoilers, because before we get into that, we had a bunch of stuff happen over the past week and a half. Our previous episode was recorded on a Wednesday night, so we missed some of the like Thursday, Friday news that we normally would have caught, like some, I'll let Anomaly introduce us to the changes from last week, because there's a lot.
There is. Yeah, actually some really big things happened. I guess, yeah, like you're right, the last 10 days or so. So I think probably one of the biggest things affecting us right now was the fact that they added a 10% damage reduction across the board to every tank spec. So essentially tanks and just take 10% less damage now, which I can tell you, having raided this week, definitely felt it. On certain fights, I think certain fights are still a little sketchy, but definitely it's a noticeable change, at least in from a rating perspective. I haven't actually done a Mythic Plus yet this week.
I actually had forgotten that this change went in.
Oh, and, really?
Like, things felt... We were already reaching the point on Denathrius where... I mean, spoilers, we were progressing Denathrius until last night, and then we killed it. But we were already reaching the point where things actually felt pretty safe, you know. I there wasn't really a point in the fight that I felt like I was like, oh my god, I'm dying, until like the tail end of phase three. But so I just attributed the change to us just being more comfortable. Like, our healers were more comfortable, we were more comfortable as tanks, like things were going better. But the 10% damage reduction, now knowing that that was actually in for last night, that definitely was a factor. Like, we would have killed it with or without that, but it definitely made it feel better.
Yeah.
For me, at least. My co-tank is a Vengeance Demon Hunter, which Vengeance, this 10% damage reduction to tanks is actually partially because, as we discussed on the last episode, Vengeance was taking 30% reduced magic damage instead of the 15% they were supposed to have. In combination with certain... well, multiple high-profile people like Dratnos being like, the damage on tanks is bad and needs to be reduced. I'm not surprised to see these changes. And this is basically what I was in for. I was like, okay, so what the correct thing to do is basically to fix Demon Hunters and then also reduce the damage the tanks take so that, you know... And this effectively does that. It also applies to physical damage, not just magic damage. The Vengeance Demon Hunter bug only applied to magic damage. But I don't mind at all, because tanks took too much damage, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely points in time, at least, you know, we'll stick to Denathrius for this, where we had tanks that would just, like, without an external cooldown, or they would go through everything. It was super, super sketchy, right? Like, particularly like the pieces that stand out in my mind is after the first ad dies, when our warrior tank would leap back to the center, they're like essentially out of range for me as a holy paladin on that platform. They're out of range as they leap over and land, and then when they land, they're slightly out of range for our dispriest before they walk over. The tank would die in like the couple melees in that a couple times. So
yeah, I very nearly got two shot through stagger at the beginning of phase three, it just by auto attacks, because the boss just hits that hard. And really bad feeling to just like fall over to auto attacks.
Oh yeah, for sure. So no, definitely welcome change. There was a couple other there wasn't really anything else major in terms of like class tuning. However, they did remove the Soul Ash cap this week, which essentially points to probably one of two things. Number one, Soul Ash is no longer being used, or will only be used to craft sort of phase one legendaries or like 9.0 legendaries, or we're in for a reset come whenever they release the next set of legendaries, if they do, right?
Since,
that's the other question.
So one of the things about Azurite, and you know, we had the Resijume that we went and spent at the vendor to get to gamble on Azurite, which was a garbage system. But the reason that they had to keep resetting and inflating the currency on that is because we would be able to buy the new legendaries, or the new Azurite, with the old ones, and they didn't want it to be like, you could save up enough to buy like 30 Azurite pieces.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, to gamble enough, yeah.
And that's not something that they wanted. But because legendaries are actually tied to item level, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, we just get, you know, ranks 5, 6, 7, 8, and those ranks just literally cost more. And so you're at your Soul Ash is actually would still be good for building the rank 4s. Like, if you're playing an alt, then, you know, you'd just be able to craft all the legendaries and it would just be at last tier's item level, basically. I wouldn't be surprised to see that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure, something maybe like that. I just think, I would hope,
other than that, you're probably right. It's going to be reset.
Yeah, it's either, I mean, which is like weird to do, or like at least not give an advance notice, unless they don't know, right, what they're going to do from a currency perspective, which, to be fair, is probably the actual reason. Like, they're not telling us anything more than just the caps are moved, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the next Soul Ash thing is for the next level of legendaries that come out, the next sort of tier list. So, so cool. So the other big news this week or last week was that PTR was in 2 weeks when it was announced last Friday. Now it's like about a week away. So we'll get PTR in about a week from now, and then we will get raid. They said something about it's either raid testing in a week after that, or like announcements of raid testing in a week after that. So
I think it's basically going to be raid testing starting like a week after that, and it'll be like, you know, they'll have the first entry level bosses that you can go in and test on normal kind of thing. Yeah. But no, probably not mythic testing for at least several more weeks after that.
Yeah, which, so I mean, PTR is not as soon as they said, right? They kind of talked about right after BlizzCon Online, like PTR coming out fairly quickly. That was early February, right? Was BlizzCon Online?
Yeah, we're about actually a month after. Yeah. So 905 came out midway through March. 9.1 PTR they said was going to come out the week that 905 came out, and that didn't happen. We are actually going to be close to a month after 905 that we're actually getting the 9.1 PTR, which is an appreciable delay.
Exactly. And I think we're looking at, I mean, people have done some of the math, but it's almost like an 8 to 12 week cycle for most PTRs, right? So people are sort of saying, like, at this point, it's like a June, July timeframe for a typical patch, right? Like, we're not really in a typical situation. Most of Blizzard is still working from home. They've just seen delays in general just in getting work done, which, I mean, if you are working at all right now in an industry that used to work in an office, not uncommon to see delays just across the board with stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we have at least this patch until probably late June, early July. And it could be even later, but yeah, it's going to be a little bit of time.
Well, it's a good thing then that we have the Burning Crusade beta to tide us over. Do you have beta access yet, Anon?
I do not. I actually haven't checked, to be fair. I have been playing season 23 of Diablo 3.
Okay. Hey, you want to boost me?
I could after this if you wanted.
I'm actually not that. I got to get off more officer shit done.
Fair enough.
It's just me. But after our conversation last week.
Yeah, no, I do not have beta. I said this last week. I wouldn't play beta just because I'm not like, I know what the game is. Like, I played that one when it was current. I enjoyed it, and I'm gonna play it when it's live. But there's no point in me like finding the new stuff in Burning Crusade, right? I've done it. So.
So I just double checked, and I still do not have beta either.
Nice. Maybe one day you'll get a beta. Maybe if you really want.
At this point, I am actually wondering if it is something like there's a flag on my account that says no beta for you.
What if it's like, have you ever seen that box where like you flip a switch and then the top of the box opens up and like a machine arm comes out and flicks the switch the other way? What if it's like you opting into beta and there's literally somebody on the other side just like clicking a button that like flicks it off? Like, it's like I thought I opted in. That's in my head what's actually happening to you right now.
So Kate in chat is asking about my account being in bad standing. My account was actually, so I bought this account. I started playing retail for the very first time in the Cataclysm pre-patch. Before that, I was playing on private servers. And then in Cataclysm pre-patch, I picked up the game, I started playing it, and I went out one Saturday and I came back and my account was banned. Because I did not use a good password and my account had been broken into and they had just like done gold spam in Orgrimmar and my account got banned. And it only took like 30 minutes to get it unbanned, and they actually mailed me an authenticator back when they didn't have the app yet. So they mailed me a physical authenticator to use with my account, which was actually great customer service. Like, let's be real there. That was actually sweet.
That's awesome.
But my account has been banned once. a decade ago, but
at least you got it back, or you could be like my original account, which is permanently banned and nice. No longer accessible by anyone, so let's not talk about what happened there. Sorry, PTR soon, you know, in terms of just the retail version, you know, I think, you know, BFA's or sorry, Burning Crusades PTR is already out there, of course. So I think, you know, it'll be a while, probably another, you know, 2-3 months before we get 9.1 on live servers. It'll be a slog in Castle Nathria. I know that at least my guild is already sick of it for whatever reason. I don't know. People are weird. I enjoy it. But yeah, it'll be fun next couple of weeks. So next up is a tweet that actually now of Echo fame, also of Limit's World First Win when he raided with them. But he's a tank in Echo, also tanks for their MDI team, the multiple winners of almost everything, gold standard in terms of MDI. Now tweeted out something just around like the compensation, sort of like the amount of money that these guys get paid. And he did the math. Essentially, he took, you know, what they won for winning, they won 3 of the 4 cups. Right, this season, and basically added up how much they won or how much each individual person got based on their winnings, divided by the number of hours that they put in to practice and then also competing. It was like $17 an hour, or 17, I guess he did it in euros, maybe. So it was like 17.
No, it's in dollars.
It's in dollars. Okay.
It is $17.81 for the first place. The second place is $12.50 an hour. The third place, we are now below minimum wage. Actually, no, I think technically it's above minimum wage in the United States. It is $8.50 an hour, and it is $2.50 an hour for the fourth and fifth place teams. And I think this really illuminates how bad they got to spend so much time on this, and the payout does not seem worth it.
Yeah, I know that they did. A couple of people did a talk about this, right? About how like there's certain levels of like you want people to practice, but you don't want people to practice too much. That's where the bulk of the time is spent perfecting these routes, right?
Right.
So the idea is like you want people to practice enough to be competent at whatever Blizzard's gonna throw at them, but at the same time, you don't want it to be this sort of like you have to essentially have a job or a means to support yourself outside of doing this that lets you play for, you know, 12 or whatever, how many hours a day now so they played, right? Yeah. Because if they don't do that, then you end up with games. Well, they don't win, but then you end up with games like we saw in early MDIs where like one team would have 40 deaths in a dungeon where it was like,
and they'd be the winner.
Yeah, like where it was just like one of those things where it's bad play. So I don't know how Blizzard balances this, right? I feel for all the competitors in terms of like, yeah, the money sucks, but like at the same time, MDI is not drawing in large amounts of viewership, large amounts of sponsorships, but like there's the actual business side of things where it's just not lucrative from a business perspective to do this. It's a great community thing, but, and it probably makes Blizzard enough money that they continue to do it, but I don't know. It's rough. It sucks for those guys, dude. They put so much time into it. They perfect that stuff. I mean, watching those runs like are they're essentially like perfect for 40 minutes, right? Or however long time it is. Like 30 minutes is literally like 30 minutes of perfect decisions almost all the way through, which is like, as a person who raids, I get tired after 8 minutes. Like Stone Legion in general is, I forget what happens at the start and at the end, like depending on where I'm at in that fight, where I'm like, maybe something happens here. Like, this is off cooldown, I'll hit it. Maybe I'm supposed to hit, you know, Aura Mastery here. I don't know. It's been off cooldown for like 30 seconds. This works. So, I mean, it's one of those things where, you feel for him, it's a ton of time, but like.
I think, and this is something that I'm fairly sure there's a follow-up tweet that I can't find where now is like, the solution I want is for them to have the time trials be shorter. Like, the compensation can stay the same and they can just open up the tournament realms for less time. They can have the time trials up for less time.
Yeah.
And then even if the compensation doesn't increase, you know, the amount of time that they will put into practice just by its nature will decrease because they're already using the full time trial time to practice.
Right.
And if it's 1 day instead of 5 days, that's a lot tighter. Then you do run into potential issues there. We're getting time trials in for 3 dungeons in a 24 or 48 hour period could be hard. 48 hours, I think it's pretty reasonable. 24 hours, what if one of your players has something that they can't get out of that 1 day? It's,
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of, it depends on like who they're making this for, right? Like the idea of like MDI in terms of a competition, you know, I don't know if there's enough, like, well, I'll use the term pro here loosely, but there's not enough like full-time WoW players, I think, to have essentially 40 people compete in Mythic Plus, right? 8 teams of 5 people each, right? So, I'm wondering like if they need to maybe broaden it in terms of like, again, shorten the amount of time that you can do the time trials, but then, I don't know, either add more team or I don't know, something like that. So, it's
I think the other thing too is that the weekly time trials or whatever are. The frequency of MDI cups is too high.
Yes. I got bored. Not that I think bored is the wrong. I was like, dude, it's like MDI, like AWC or the Arena World Championship, like back to back. I'm like, this is like too many.
For like a point of comparison, you know, MTG and some other card games like that do fairly frequent tournaments. Like MTG in particular actually does, before the pandemic, you know, was you could turn on a stream of some kind of tournament. Basically, if not every weekend, then every other weekend, you could turn on some kind of tournament and watch it. Yeah. But it was different, right? Because one tournament would be a standard tournament. Another tournament would be a modern tournament or a legacy tournament. One of them, you know, so not only was it, you know, if you were only interested in one of those, then you might turn on a tournament once every month or 2 months. Or if you were a legacy player, once every 3 years. No shade. But the frequency of like having like it's really difficult for them to like slice it up because there's no like oh, I'm a real Sanguine Depths player and I'm just gonna tune in for the Sanguine Depths tournament. Like, no,
exactly.
Nobody does that. I do think that they would be well served with just having fewer.
Yeah, and it's funny as you're talking. I was looking up actually, so I used to watch and follow Dota 2 a lot. And like Dota 2 putting together their sort of pro circuit. And they do like one major tournament a month, right? Or and then like, or like one, I guess they call it like minor tournament or like tournament to get to like the end of the quarter, sort of like. So every quarter was like their big event, other major events. And they'd have like a minor, I guess they call it in the middle. And like, so it's like one a month, which I feel like if they did this once a month, probably a little bit easier to swallow, but we'll see. Yeah. We'll see what they do here. So yeah, so now, sorry to the MDI boys. I wish you made more money. You guys are impressive to watch at least. So
yeah.
So then we get on to, I think, an interesting, I don't know even if we want to cover this very quickly, but it was like, like Max on his stream goes like, hold on 1 second. I'm going to say something and then we're going to watch this. Like the community take this as sort of like gospel, right? As a joke. So on his stream, Max essentially like was like, when is the patch going to come out? Max has no idea. Like Max is literally like, yes, he's the GM for a World First Guild or the World First Guild, right? Yes, he knows people at Blizzard, but at the same time, people at Blizzard have a job to like not tell everybody everything. you still don't tell everybody everything. He doesn't know anything more really than probably most players.
And they may not even know at this point.
Yeah. And so he like pulls out a calendar on his stream and is like, I think the patch is coming out this month, like this week. This is definitely when it's coming out.
He like picks a day and it's like, it's coming out on this day. My favorite part about it is he's like, he doesn't even pull up like the built-in Windows calendar or whatever. He like, he goes to calendar.com.
Bud, come on, just click the little thing in the corner of your computer there, bud.
He goes to calendar.com and he picks a random ass day.
Yeah.
And he says before this, like, oh, this is going to show up. So there's going to be some like YouTube video that shows up in no context. They're going to strip out the part where I'm memeing about this, and they're just going to include the prediction of the date. Yeah. And lo and behold, not even like 3 days later, there was one.
Yeah, just like they're like, and world first Raider Max of the GM of Limit is saying the patch is coming out at this date. And the people in the comments are like, oh, he knows because he gets like advanced patch notice. Blizzard talks to him. He gets like internal builds to test them for them. I'm like, dude, people are nuts, man. They're nuts. But in any event, that was fun. I think you pinged me that in Discord. And I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
Like, we need more of this with people just like
being I'm
like,
actually going to post it in chat right now in Twitch. If you haven't seen it, it is hilarious. I will not care if you turn off stream for a second to go and watch it.
Yeah.
And then if you're not in chat, if you're listening to the audio version of this, it is in the show notes and you can go and check it out.
Yeah, it was real good. It was real good. So, all right, moving on. Just a couple more things this week. These are a little bit lighter. Of course, it was April Fool's or April 1st was Thursday. So April Fool's Day, of course, Blizzard did their patch notes. They were okay. I mean, they're Blizzard patch notes, right? It's not too exciting. So yeah, I don't know. It was April. I don't know if there's any.
The Blizzard patch notes were not as good as the peak of Saran, the April Fool's gag. So
that is, I mean, the peak one, dude. The people who actually figured it out, dude, claps to you guys. God, it was so good. We put a lot. I mean, to be fair, like Babs put a ton of time into that one too. So. I'm glad that the people who picked up on it got it. So, but yeah, I mean, the notes were the notes, and there's a couple of the community things that came out, which is, I hate April Fool's Day in general. It's just not funny anymore. So
I have one, not as good as the peak one. And actually I think a lot more confusing than the peak one, that I think is funny in hindsight, but less funny for a couple people the day of. Yeah. So April Fool's Day is Thursday, right? And we raid on Friday, and one of our officers posts like at the raid team, we are going to be re-clearing this week to get more gear so that we can do the phase 3 DPS push on Sire Denathrius. Please make sure that you're up to date with all the strats and everything for the earlier bosses and how they've changed. And all this stuff about like doing reclear.
That is awesome.
And oh my God, I feel bad for a couple people. A couple people read it and didn't realize what day it was. And we're like, oh my God, I got to prep for this. And I got it. And like one of them read it while he was like on the way out to work and didn't get back on Discord until after work. And he had been thinking about it all day. And then,
oh man,
like he posted in the morning, like, I'm going to be late tomorrow night. Or like something like that. He was going to be late. And when he got back, he said, ha ha, I got it. Good joke, Bellium.
That is awesome.
Oh man, it was.
That is so good. That's actually really good. Yeah, we didn't do anything in my guild. But yeah, I also am not the biggest fan of April Fool. So
I, and the best part is, I had no idea this was going to happen.
Oh, those are the best.
So I got up in the morning and I read this and I sat there for a minute and I was like, wait, okay. I've been in the office chat. There's zero unread messages. When did we discuss this? Is this something we discussed in the last office meeting? What?
Like, why? Did I sign off on this?
And then I realized it was now April.
Oh, good show on. See, those are the good ones. Like those are the good ones where it's like, yeah, no, I don't know if it's a thing or not. And it's not that a big deal if like it's a joke at the end of the day. But yeah, most of them are sort of rough. I think some folks in chat are talking about WoWhead did a model, a new model for a mount that'll was an April Fool's joke. A couple people are kind of pissed about that one, but yeah, it's April Fool's.
I don't think people were pissed about the fact that in the April Fool's they had data mined Sylvanas redeemed models. And I actually reading the Roundhead comments on that was hilarious because none of the comments got the joke.
That's funny. So yeah, so it was April 1st. There's a couple of good jokes out there, a couple of not so good ones. But yeah, that's April. And I guess the only final thing I want to cover before we get into the big topic for tonight was actually something that personally I find interesting. I don't know if anybody else finds it interesting, but I do, which was the fact that the auction house of World of Warcraft started as an add-on. So there's a story up on Wowhead. We'll post the link to it. But essentially, during the beta cycle, if you guys played back then, if at all, there was sort of an add-on suite called Cosmos that basically had a bunch. It was like almost a full UI replacement. But as a part of it, it actually had like sort of an auction house-like system built in where you could like post you want to sell certain items. And then people could post they want to buy them, and you essentially had to meet up and do like the trade in person. It wouldn't automatically sort of send it back and forth, but it was sort of like an auction house light or auction house like add-on. And the funny thing is that Blizzard as developers noticed it and essentially were like, well, we can't stop them from doing this because of the way we built the UI code. So we're just going to implement our own version of this so that like it's not exploitative or anything like that. So, you know, that was it was an interesting thing where like people essentially like there, I guess there's a team called Alpha Project, which essentially is like trying to basically archive all the early WoW stuff in terms of like add-ons and put in game files and things like that. And they picked up on this in some screenshots. It's funny, the screenshot that they post in the WoWhead articles from Ropetown, which was like if you didn't play back then, Ropetown was a massive horde guild. They were like one of the best horde guilds in the US. So I thought that was funny that I'm literally super old that I realized this or remember this. But in any event, there was also an excerpt about this in the WoW Diaries, which was the book written by one of the lead designers on the original designers on World of Warcraft. Did all like the internal dungeons and things like that, built those. His name's like John Stat, which I own, and I've not read this far into the book, but I will now. But yeah, so it was a cool little, hey, the auction house started as an add-on, and Blizzard was like, we can't stop them from doing this. We'll just make our own. And that way people don't like exploit, like people don't like ruin each other. So
I think it is actually very interesting that this add-on actually copies a very common functionality if you've ever played Korean and some Chinese MMOs, where they have a literal bazaar where you go and you park your character and you stay logged in, and you like some of them, you like set up a little table and you like have above your head like a description of what you're selling. And like you have all your stuff in there with your prices, and a lot of the more popular ones have moved to like a WoW style auction house or a Guild Wars 2 style auction house. But it is very interesting that that's actually like I've played games where that is actually how the auction house works. Is you go to the literal bazaar in the Bane City, and you walk around until you find someone that's selling the thing you want.
I mean, yeah, it's my first experience with that was in Star Wars Galaxies. So, yeah, that was fun times. But yeah, so I mean, interesting little tidbit coming back from the past. This Alpha Project thing, I'll probably have to check out more because that's interesting. So
yeah, that's a neat project.
Yeah. So so in any event, that was news for last week. So I think it's time to get into our main discussion topic, which is I guess Mythic Cyrodiil, really the Cyrodiil fight in general. So. Yeah. We're going to treat this like similar to what we did with Stone Legion Generals, maybe a little bit more positive than that.
I would say a lot more positive. We don't have any of the... There's some people in Peak that we were like trying to come up with people that were interested in coming on the podcast for this episode, and nobody's schedules quite worked out.
Yeah.
But there were a couple people that I was like, I wish we could get you on because you totally disagree with my take on this boss.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess real quick, initial impressions... One word, one sentence. How'd you feel about it?
This is the best boss I've proc'd.
Wow. Okay. I love it. Awesome. Yeah. Unfortunately, so my point of view will be not from a progression point of view, but just from sort of like experience the kill through the fight through a second kill. So I didn't get to progress with my guild on this one, but I mean, maybe not the best progression boss just because I didn't progress on it, but it is a very, very good boss. Probably top five, at least in my time playing the game. you know, top 10, it's definitely up there. So,
and I think it is worth adding a little bit of context now that we're past that like one sentence blurb for why I think that's my top boss that I have progressed. And it is because that the, like my rating history basically goes back to the end of Legion. So I was like 5 of 10 or whatever, however many bosses there were in Tomb of Sargeras. And then I got CE the next one, but I only progressed Aggramar and Argus. And then I didn't do Crucible of Storms during BFA, so I only did the mainline raids. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of like really medium to bad bosses. Like there were a lot of like solid fine bosses in BFA. There were several like big stinkers.
Yeah.
But there weren't any that I think were on this level. And I think the one that is closest for me is Argus. But I would have hated having to do strategy stuff for Argus because of this stupid chain breaks. And there's no bullshit like that. There's no bullshit like, oh, you gotta die so this mechanic doesn't kill the raid.
Yeah.
Which I understand, like Argus's theme was death. Like you literally died and that was part of the fight. It wasn't like you used the Balrogs on them. They died and they went in the Tree of Life and it was super cool and very thematic. But also it was really finicky to get that timing right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would agree that as just as a fight in general, like doing it on Mythic and even, you know, Heroic and things like that, very good fight across the board. I guess I want to do this maybe slightly differently than we did the other way, which is like, let's sort of focus first on like the negative things, like get those out of the way, because I don't think there's going to be many of them. But I did have just sort of a couple of these conversations started. So I think the first one, the big one that most people are going to or sort of think about or talk about is the lag in phase one with the ad spawns, right?
So if you've done this boss on normal or heroic but haven't done it on mythic, the main difference in phase one is that you start with more stacks, so you need to do more soaks. But also, if you stack on top of someone else, and it's a very small raid, you still have to be like inside their model for this to happen, you lose multiple stacks and you spawn multiple ads. So there's a couple different ways people deal with this, but one of the more prominent strategies is that on the first set, you spawn like 30 plus adds. Yeah. And then the rest of them are very safe and you get like 3 adds. But that one where you get 34 adds, there's like a laundry list of abilities that you're not allowed to use because they will actually just break the instance server. And even then, even if you don't use those, sometimes you still get screwed and this instant server lags and people just die because the healers can't heal and nobody can kill the adds. Oh, I guess that's the other thing too. If you don't kill the adds fast enough, they like swoop back inside the person that they came out of, which means you basically soaked and took a bunch of damage and wasted mana for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the lag issue is very, it's funny. It's, we talked about it a little bit as a guild and it reminds me weirdly enough of Diablo 3 when you used to get into very, very high rifts and there was tons of damage and mobs you would pull together. And like, if you use certain abilities there, the servers would just die because they couldn't do all the calculations. And one of our officers was actually saying like, I wonder if this is a issue with the target cap. Meaning the
meteoring
game
in garage, like in mop, meteoring actually was a big problem because a lot of things meteored at 20 targets and they had raid bosses with 20 targets.
And so to calculate the damage split.
It had to calculate the damage split.
So that was one of the things that we thought about was that because you're hitting more than 5 targets, the idea is you're doing reduced damage. So there's like a calculation that happens about what ad gets hit by what or like what your damage reduction is or what's in range. And because there's cap there now, there's like additional computation there.
Yeah. But
would be it's great if that was the issue.
Biggest offender, I think, was Earthenwall Totem.
Yeah.
And that one doesn't do any splitting or like it always hits everybody. I think a big part of the issue is just the sheer number of events that happen. Because when the cleansing pan goes out to drop people's stacks, you have 30 people losing a debuff stack. And then actually, so you lose 30 debuff stacks across like 15 people. You spawn 30 adds. Then all of them start doing pulsing damage every like second. Yep. On top of all of the damage events that are now going out on all of them. And so there's actually just a huge number of events. And so things like Earthenwall Totem, that applies basically for every damage event, there's an Earthenwell Totem event on every player.
Yeah.
It gets really, really big, really fast. So I think that's the really big offenders are those ones. We ran into issues with Death and Decay and with Ashen Hollow as well, and basically said, like, don't use the Mumpole. But yeah, actually, the other team in my guild that raids on Tuesday, Wednesday, I had to actually switch off of it because the servers on Tuesday night were just not stable enough for them to reliably do this strategy. They had to change their soak strategy.
Yeah, I mean, we don't do 30 off the bat. I think we do like something like 10. So we do like two big stacks over the course of the fight. It's basically the first one. The first one on the first Ravage and the first one in the second Ravage area is where we do our big groupings of people dropping multiple stacks. And it's a great experience when you literally are watching, like when you stand in Spirit Link and you watch your health go all the way down and then like go all the way up and then like this, or like when you know the lag is coming because you hit a button and like the adds essentially are dead, but you're still taking damage and like health bars are still going down.
We had a very frequent thing that happened is the animation for Night Hunters would get desynced.
Yeah.
They would go off, but the damage wouldn't show up on our raid frames yet, and the animation won't have gone off yet. So it would look like people were getting hit by Night Hunter during the blood price.
Yeah.
But in actuality, it was just the client, like the game client, catching up with the server. But we started off doing about 34, and we ended up dropping it down to 28 just to make things safer. But it was still, it's a lot of ads.
Yeah. Yeah. And we even resorted to like soft resetting the instance a couple times. So like zoning out for 30 minutes, coming back in, maybe getting a better instance server somewhere.
Yeah. I think that was less of a problem for us because we raid on the weekend, like Friday night, Sunday night. Like there's not nearly as many guilds that raid on those nights as there are Tuesday and Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's definitely the frustrating part. And a workaround was basically just spawning less ads, which is sucks because like then you essentially are elongating, like if anybody misses a soak or like there's other larger damage events further on in the fight, you just can't get past it right away. Or sorry, not in the fight, but in phase one. So it sucked. I think it's funny. It reminded me of that D3 thing. And then it just reminds me of, which most people might not remember, but doing Razor Gore and Veilstraz in BWL on Tuesdays on my server was hell, because like it was literally the similar thing where like on Razor Gore, which is a boss fight in BWL where there are ads that spawn, you have to control them, essentially the ads would just spawn and ignore you, like you would be firing or hitting them and they would just run past you and go kill a healer, like you never even existed, right? And like Veilstraz was the second fight where you get a buff that made you do a bunch of damage, but then you die. Like essentially it was like you had to kill the boss before it killed you. But when everybody got that buff, you literally would lag for like so upwards of like 10 to 15 seconds.
And so you basically lose everything from the buff and then die.
Yeah, exactly. Like you'd lose basically that 10 or 15 seconds on essentially a patchwork DPS type fight. Right. So, you couldn't afford that at the time. So yeah, it was funny to see server issues again when it wasn't just like Blizzard servers being bad. It's literally the fight was designed in a way that people could
I think they were thinking that putting AoE caps on abilities would mean this wouldn't happen. But then these ads don't have that much health.
Right. Exactly. And that their mages still exist. Like the problem is they didn't cap every AoE ability. So like there are still classes that exist. And you're right. They don't have enough health.
Living Bomb is another one that does it. Does the lag. Like Living Bomb's real bad.
Gotcha.
But yeah, like DK is disgusting on them. DK is probably another big lag source, but they do so much damage that we don't care. And they drop an AMZ on it. So they're basically paying for it. Paying for the extra damage taken by dropping the AMZ.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's, I mean, to be fair, that's the big phase one sort of big negative. I think it's going to be a big negative that most people, you know, when they think back about this fight, will remember this. But I had a couple of, I mean, questions wise, so I don't know this. Like, that was really having me gone through the fight, you know, Tuesday and Thursday this week. That was really the only area where I was like, man, this sucks. But I don't know from a progression perspective. I sort of put in notes here like tank position, because we had a couple of issues with tank positioning, but that might just our tanks playing bad versus like the actual fight.
There are a couple of issues. One of them is actually just the level of execution on very minor positioning details is very high. Mm-hmm. And I actually don't mind. I actually really like, I enjoyed this fight a lot. But it's very easy to go in with like a vague idea of what the positioning requirements are, and then actually not be able to do any of them at the level that is necessary, where most bosses, you can actually walk in with no idea what the positioning requirements are and figure it out on the fly and nobody notices.
Gotcha.
The actually bigger issue, I think, is that Sire Denathrius is actually really picky about teleporting back and forth from the platforms. So if you're not familiar with the Mythic Phase 2, there are adds on each of the corner platforms that you have to, like, if you don't have a Venthyr teleport or a glide or something like that, you have to use a lock gateway to get over there. There's one of them that like pulls you over there, and that's cool. You have to move Denathrius back and forth from those. And the way it works is that he has this thing called an inevitable that just he teleports behind you and he does an extra auto attack, basically. And sometimes he's very responsive about it, and other times he's not. And basically, over Prague, what I worked out is that he only does the teleport if across one of those gaps, if he's actually at the edge of the platform that he was on. So he if he's already on the edge of like walking in off of the platform, he will teleport immediately. But if he's not, he actually has to waddle his ass to the edge of the platform.
God.
And then he does it. And so if you're not aware of that, it actually makes it look like there's just like this huge variance in the times. Because if you position the boss slightly differently, suddenly he takes a different path to where you are. And you might have to wait 3 or 4 additional seconds. And since there's really tight timing requirements like when you have to get the boss over there for a hand of destruction to go off or you wipe, that can be very frustrating, but it's one of those things where we spent some time figuring it out, but at that point, once we got it figured out, it was very consistent. We had almost no issues with it in the back half of the progression.
That's good. Yeah. I was worried too, because like the couple of times we had a couple different issues or wipes this week, when I was in, to like the boss not moving, I didn't know if that was like a spell queuing issue or just like a, like he's just weird with movements. But it sounds like it was, once you figured it out, it was pretty consistent in terms of like,
he needs to get to the edge first. And that is like, it's something you can play around, and it means basically sacrificing your damage because you have to move a lot earlier than you think you have to move.
Gotcha.
So like when you go down, the boss has to go over to one of the platforms. I go down, I hit the boss, I get through it because we do a tank swap at that point. And I walk over and I stand where the warlock gate is going to go up. Yeah. And then I go up there. And if the boss teleports to me at that point, he is right on the edge and he will teleport to me again immediately. And if he's not, then he will spend 3 seconds walking over there and then he will teleport to me. And I know that both of those are going to be like, it's going to get to where it needs to be at the right time. So both of them are okay. It's just figuring out each of those little things.
Yeah. Takes time. Yeah. Realizing which one you're going to get. Yeah. That's fair. That's fair. Interesting. That's cool. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like then like really from a, hey, this fight, this part of the fight sucks is really just contained to like phase one and those adds, right?
Yeah, I would say there is actually one more thing that I would bring up about being like a kind of a little bit of a problem. Mm-hmm. There is one piece of this fight that is actually very high variance, and that is damage on the tanks. So in phase two, the Remornia like add applies a dot on every auto that connects. If you dodge or parry it, it does not apply the dot.
Oh.
So like some pulls, I could tank it basically forever and end up at like 4 stacks.
Yeah.
Other pulls, I could tank it for 4 seconds and end up at 4 stacks. And that kind of variance was pretty frustrating. And then in phase three, that same kind of thing happens. The boss actually hits like a truck. Like, absolutely. He can two-shot a brewmaster.
Jesus. Okay.
With auto attacks. It's really hard. And he applies a dot when he connects with an auto attack on you. So it's very sensitive to dodge variance. And even if you end up at the same total number of stacks, when you get the stacks matters. Like if you get the stacks immediately before a blood price, but then don't gain any more after. Well, that's actually a lot scarier, because having them during the blood price means you tick down during the blood price.
And right,
you run the risk of dying. On the other hand, if you get them after, well, that's fine. That's totally fine.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, that's fair, but...
I think it's fairly minor in the scheme of
things. I think that definitely sucks, but I think that type of variance, I don't know if they can even get around it, right? Versus
I would say...
Other than you gain stacks at a certain interval, like a common,
which they've done before, and I am also not a huge fan of, I would say, I don't know what the right answer is. I was definitely glad I had Kyrian Potion on this fight, though, because it works in phase two.
Nice. Awesome. All right, well, maybe we go through, I thought next we'd go through basically each phase, kind of do some highlights about what we liked, what we didn't like, or really what we liked about each phase. I think that's the biggest thing. I think from a negative perspective, you know, we can sort of reiterate phase one sucks for ads, but I mean, like, let's sort of maybe think a little bit more positive. I think both of us have a pretty positive outlook on this fight. So, so phase one, we'll start there, which is essentially just the same as Mythic, right? Except there's some additional ads that spawn. Yeah. Or sorry, same as Heroic. Not too much interesting here, other than the fact that, like, I actually like the fact that for the pull-in part, like the end of phase one portion of it, having classes be able to mitigate that completely just by like shape-shifting.
That was super cool.
Or yeah, like that was actually really interesting. The other thing too was like, if you had, I'm gonna let you know a secret. I didn't realize that if you had zero stacks going to this phase, nothing hits you. Or going into that final part of phase one, nothing hits you. So the first time we did it, I was watching one of our mages stream, and I was like, dude, you gotta like run to the middle. I'm like yelling in his chat, like run to the middle, run to the, like you're gonna die. But he had zero stacks, so he was able to sit there and do more damage to the boss, which I thought was like cool micro-optimization. I mean, you end up trading more damage or more potential damage in phase one on your raid to then in turn get more DPS in sort of those intermission, that like intermission phase.
I think it was actually really, really cool that there were classes that could do that. But it's also one of those things where I didn't normally, you know, like Nizoth, being able to negate an important mechanic with class abilities is actually really frustrating. But here, instead of it being like a hard requirement of like, you must have this many people that can negate their stacks, it was like a soft requirement where like the more you had, the better, but you could do it with zero.
Exactly. And you didn't want too many because then blood price damage would have been high on those individuals that weren't clearing stacks. You ended up clearing some anyway. So I thought that was really cool. I actually liked the sort of run into the middle part. It was sort of
it's a very cool part of the fight. Yeah.
It's always nice when end bosses, and I'm a fan of this just in general, have sort of like a down phase, like a down portion of it where it's like not something you're really thinking about. It's sort of like a mental reset to like all right, this is like break. yeah there's like a
like actually have two of those, I would say.
Yeah, the running into the mirror, I think that sort of 10 seconds or so at start of phase three is also very similar. But yeah, I thought that was really cool. And then you of course do what literally any, like, the greatest bosses in World of Warcraft history have all had this, and that is you go through a floor. Like any good boss, like if you want to make, like Blizzard, fun fact, if you want to make a great boss, have it be two levels, right? This is like, that's all you need. Like I will, it's tangent. One quick tangent here is that in Knights of the Old Republic, the Star Wars MMO, right? Is that Knights of the Old, or no?
No, it's Star Wars The Old
Republic. The Old Republic, Star Wars The Old Republic. One of the first raid bosses there had a multi-level thing where like the floor would fall away and you essentially had to jump down platforms that were slowly falling and going away to make it to the bottom and then kill him down there. So you couldn't just like jump off the edge. You take fall damage. You had to like jump your way down. Amazing boss. So like honestly in MMOs, if you can have any sort of height changes, it's going to be a great boss.
You're going to love Kael'thas in a few months.
Oh god, that was such a good fight, dude. That was such a good fight.
So I would say before we move on to phase two, there's one thing I wanted to bring up about phase one, and that is the damage stop. Did you guys stop damage?
It would depend, but yeah, so basically essentially like trying to hit that 70.5% as Ravage was cast. We towed the line, I think, a lot. It was funny, it would always like our raid leader would always be like, it's either cleave off the boss for the final set of ads or just AoE would be the call. And like, that's how we sort of managed it. But yeah, that was, That was interesting. That wasn't too, we didn't run into too many issues there though, I'd say.
We had a poll last night where we didn't have, like, stop was called, people didn't stop. We pushed the boss 10 seconds early. And this is actually, I think, a really interesting, like, I, in general, do not like DPS stops on bosses. I think Stone Legion Generals is a great example of a fight that is completely broken by the fact that this stuff happens. Zekul is another great example of a fight where this happens and it's not fun. But none of the boss ability timers actually change. Like, none of the boss orderings, there's no spell queuing weirdness with when you push or anything like that. Mm-hmm. What the boss does actually stays perfectly consistent regardless of when you push. The only thing is, are your cooldowns going to be up when you need them?
Exactly.
And that was what happened, is we wiped on the second round of ads where we were trying to kill the second melee one and we didn't have Ashen Hollow for it. We didn't have some of our other CDs for it. We had lost people earlier because Spirit Link wasn't back up.
Interesting. Yeah.
And so, like,
that's actually really good design. Like, to be fair, that's actually really good design if you think about it.
I actually think it worked very well.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I don't mind this. This damage stop, I did not mind at all.
Yeah, because you're not doing it because you get bad overlaps. You're doing it because you literally can't do the next part of the fight earlier than, like, what you need, like, what you need to, right? Yeah.
And like, we could have papered over our early push by having health potions, and, you know, people could have used damage potions on the second melee add and things like that. And we probably could have recovered and struggle bust our way into phase three. But I actually thought that was actually a really interesting contrast with Stone Legion Generals, where there's all these damage stops and they were all miserable.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're not doing it for any sort of cooldown reason. You're literally doing it because it's more efficient, right? Which is, like, just, yeah, awful. Cool. All right, cool. So then I think we kind of get into phase two, which is, honestly, it's funny. The first time I did this, so I did this, for full disclosure, I did this after my guild had already killed it in a raid where basically 16 of the 20 players had been in our first kill. So we had rotated a couple people in. I was one of those people. I was confused as hell the first time I did it. And then after that, it was like a choreographer, like, it was like almost like a dance, right? Like, very like your movement was like almost like, it was not almost, it was sort of set in stone where you moved from different ad to different ad. And it was cool where, like, kill the ad before the next hand, so you get pulled back to the main platform, go through, go to the next ad rate. So I thought that was, I mean, like, movement here was like king, was super good, I think. And then the fact that there was like these mini DPS sort of checks all along the way. I don't know. I actually really enjoyed it too.
And there's things like, even if you failed to kill an ad, it was actually very bad. Like, it's pretty bad, but it's not like instantly wipe the raid bad.
Right.
You can still have people, especially Venthyr players, because of the teleport, go back over to a platform and finish it off and then come back. And if you have to do that, you're probably missing the phase 3 damage check, because the boss damage at the end of phase 2 does matter for that.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do it to continue progressing and, like, salvage a pull and not just, like, waste 5 minutes because you were at 1% on the last ad.
Yeah, I mean, we did that a couple times, actually, with, is it Glom? Is the ranged ad? Yeah. Like, where we... Yeah, where we'd miss the damage on them, and we'd basically come back around next time we went to do the Cabalists, or Cabalists, right, on the main platforms.
Yeah.
We'd have some range peel off and kill Glom when they're low, which meant, to your point, we'd end up in phase three at like 41.5% or like 42%, basically, you know, 1.5-2% off where you really want to be. But yeah, I mean, I honestly, phase two, like, I can imagine progressing. It was probably very frustrating, particularly if you nailed your job as an individual, right? Like, if you knew your movement and somebody else in your raid did not know their movement, I can see that being very, very frustrating. But at the same time, I think I had a ton of fun going through it.
I think it was a very fun phase. And this is actually, like, yeah, to a degree, you're right. I think the biggest issue we had was actually just people missing interrupts on the first ad. we had some initial damage issues when people got down there, you know, just regular stuff from people not being familiar with the phase yet.
Mm-hmm.
But then we had just like a series of issues with people missing kicks. Like last night, we actually lost a bunch of pulls to people missing kicks, and it was our kill night. Like, yeah. And that was frustrating because there's 10 kicks that need doing, and they're the only kicks that need doing throughout the entire fight. And we were actually killing the first melee ad so quickly that they actually could have just gone and AFK'd next to where their ad would spawn, and we still would have been fine. So yeah. That was kind of frustrating. But that was really like the only like do this right or insta wipe kind of thing going on, and it was okay.
Yeah, it's cool too getting into this where like again I think we sort of mentioned this, we'll probably mention again even in phase 2. So there's no spell queuing here, but it's weird that it's so difficult from an execution perspective. It makes sense. Which like I'm fine with. Like a lot of people might be like, well, it's sort of on rails, like you'll do the same thing every pull, but which is to an extent the you know, you do, but there's enough variance in terms of like even when like you kill ads where puddles spawn, maybe where you're positioned, right? You know, maybe where the hand pulls you, how far away the boss might be from the portal, right? I think there's enough variance in like positioning and sort of those type of abilities, even like the massacres are always a cluster. That it didn't feel too bad for me, but yeah, spell queuing I think felt amazing.
I think it's the combination as well. Like part of the reason it felt so good is that it's a combination of a tight damage check, because actually hitting the ad damage checks once you're comfortable with it is not particularly hard. Hitting the ad damage checks while also hitting the boss DPS check to push at 40.5% or whatever it is, 40.5 or 40.3, instead of having the boss pushed based on a timer, it having to do that on top of the really tight execution checks, like where you drop the hand of destruction actually really matters. And you know where you point the like doing racking pain was actually like it's such a simple mechanic, but it's actually so much fun to do because you what it is it's the tank frontal cone, and it applies, I think it's either a 50% or 100% increased damage. I think it's 50% increased damage taken for 25 seconds. Except it also hits ads.
Right, which is so cool.
So you get to do things like when the Kabbalists spawn, you know, you park him next to the first one so people can cleave off of him onto the Kabbalist. And then you can aim the racking pain at the other one and you hit both of them and both of them take 50% more damage. And it's just like everybody's happy.
Oh,
everybody loves it. And it's also one of those things where like there's varying degrees of success. Like you can literally go and stand on the other ad to like guarantee that you hit it.
Right.
And that's like level zero of just, I just want to get this on, like my damage is irrelevant. I want to do this. But then there's also like getting progressively more comfortable, you know, staying closer to the boss and aiming it while you're there hitting the boss, that you can contribute to damage more. And so I just think that is actually one of the highlights of that. And like you do it on all of the horseman ads.
Yep.
There's like 3 of the 4 get the debuff so that you can push them in time.
Right.
And
it's cool. It's cool. Like, so not, I mean, cut you off, but I think it's cool that like, I think each class, each sort of group, you could say like DPS, tanks and healers have their own sort of like thing to do. Right. Which on an end boss, I think is what you always want, is like just one sort of group isn't sort of AFK or not sort of super engaged in it. And yeah, I mean like from a healing perspective, healing it, there was very much the times where like we end up getting to or killing the ads in the beginning, right, of that phase where was difficult once the stacks got higher, right? So like once like when you'd get there, like even the second ad where like literally like there's a hand of destruction, so you're gonna take some damage there. You're like moving through, at least I went with the melee, so you're moving through the portal, and then I have to remember that I have to have Holy Shock up because that's the quickest way for me to get over to that ad. Hit it with a Holy Shock, and if I don't have it up, then like I have to wait for a judgment or something. So keeping that in mind, thinking a little bit ahead, I'm making sure I'm there. And then just the damage in general, like the other really sketchy portion is after the I think it's the first set of the second set that you kill, and you have to basically run to the next set. Run is super sketchy. Like, scary as a healer.
On our kill pull, Myco Tank, Vengeance Demon Hunter Extraordinaire, leaps to the edge of the platform like he normally does. He's booking it over to the other side, leaps again, and there's this quirk of the like empty spaces in between the platforms, so there's actually a floor at the bottom of it. It's not just a bottomless pit. Nice. Meaning you can target it with Felleap,
oh, no.
or whatever it's called. And yeah. so he leaped into the pit. Like, we've got a clip of it, and he just like goes right past. Like, you can tell he was trying to target the other side of the like plus sign that is the center yeah. platform, because he goes right past the edge of it down into the hole.
So and good.
Has to get B-res.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah, I mean, that's I think healing, that's like, I'll just say a really fun, like, it's not easy, it's difficult, but like once you get into a rhythm, it's definitely manageable, which I think is what you want. And then yeah. DPS wise, having not played DPS in a while, I think though it's still interesting that your DPS like matters on certain targets, right? Like there yeah. are certain adds where like you're full single target, there's other ones where you're like, all right, just let dots take this one on, and then we'll, you know what I mean, don't focus them too much. So and even
like there's periodic telegraphed points in time where like you got to move and damage, like yeah. when a massacre is happening, you need to be watching your feet, and it's not like it's not literally the entire time, so it's not draining and
yeah
doesn't cause fatigue, but it's still like you got to do it, you're gonna die because that thing one shots and one yeah. shot tanks.
Yeah,
also so, crescendo.
Oh yeah, crescendo is those overlaps with massacre and crescendo, I still like, it's the one point in time in my like this is one of the first fights in the instance where I wished I was a Mistweaver just so that I didn't have to look at raid frames to heal people. Where I could just like rely on like the dumb smart healing that we have to like save all people.
For transcendence.
Yeah, or transcendence to save although me,
you're,
right?
You're just as likely to transcend into a massacre as you are to escape the fall of your death. So
exactly. But no, so I think phase two is a ton of fun to go through. But yeah, I think, I mean, any other sort of highlights that you can think of?
I would say probably one piece that was like very minor frustration is mm-hmm. So the hand of destruction spot that people get pulled to is just a random spot in a circle around the boss. So you don't have complete control over it. It does lead to some very awkward things where like sometimes people get hit by impale at bad spots and they put the red stuff on the floor. The red stuff makes you take double damage.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, you take double damage. So if he puts the hand of destruction in the red stuff, which is, you can play around this, it's possible, it's just like, if he puts it in there, like people with the dot on them are really spooky, they're probably gonna die. If you're tanking Denathrius and he decides to auto attack you while you're in that, you might die.
Jesus.
It's like very spooky and just kind of annoying. Like it would have been nicer if the hand of destruction were just like always behind him.
Yeah.
Like just so that there wasn't this random chance of getting screwed and then having to figure out, oh, that's what those do. They're not just fire on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. There was definitely a couple of hands where like the tank had it a little bit too close to one of the sides of the mirror. And like you get like weird yeah. camera angle stuff when you fly in. It's just like,
I had that happen on one of our very close pulls.
Yeah, I'm like, just please, I don't like do it, move it away, or like I'm so confused, and then like you're freaking out. So I think phase two is great, and I think the end of phase two with the whole idea of like timing the damage, like there we similar to like phase one where like we were, you know, holding damage for cooldowns, right? The end of phase two had like this weird DPS thing where like if we were low enough, like our range would just run, like they would not stop and do any damage to the boss. They would just run to positioning, and like the melee would essentially finish the boss off right by the mirror and push it into phase three. And that way range was already in position. There wasn't sort of and we got more damage in phase three while he was sort of setting up. Right.
Yeah.
So we had a couple of pulls where we had done well in terms of damage throughout phase two that we're able to do this, which I think is a nice little, again, like these small different, like these little, just small micro, optimizations I think are cool, right? Because you don't have yeah. to do that. It doesn't materially change what happens in phase three, but makes it slightly easier.
Proud participant of one of the slowest kills of this boss ever, I would say it definitely does matter.
Probably, yeah. So then you get into phase three, which essentially is the mythic only phase. It's really not a secret phase, right? It's just like the mythic only mechanic where, you know, your raid is essentially split in two. You have your, we called it like the melee group, which is this one group in one side of the mirror, and then the range group, which is sort of at the other side of the mirror, right? And essentially you can't touch each other. So you kind of work in two camps to like go through the phase. And it's definitely like, again, we talked a little bit about phase two, I think being choreographed, like this is literally like every individual movement is like extremely specific so that you essentially put yourself in a position where like the two groups never meet. Right. Yeah. Or like as
you're
one group
walking and like you are on the opposite edges of a circle and this circle is just spinning around, kind of like slowly moving around the platform and looping back around and like making it so that the people on the circle are at the right spot to bait, you know, ravages and to survive massacres and to drop stuff for the other team to soak is like, it's very, very highly choreographed. And there's actually a lot on the tanks of making sure the boss is always positioned correctly.
Yeah.
So that this can work.
Yeah. I will tell you my first pull into phase three? I killed myself.
Yeah.
Because I did not realize that in the mirror phase, the knockback is reversed. Yeah. So I was behind him. Thinking I was going to get knocked away from the group.
Yeah.
And then I got knocked right in. Well, not right in, but like I got knocked forward. And like, I think one of the mages or a couple of the mages had like blinked to stay in place so they didn't get out of range.
Yeah. Yeah. We did not have people blink on those to stay in place. Like, you get knocked back and you fucking like it.
Yeah. So once I figured that out, it was great. But that did, it's funny, that did, like, we did have a like one or two pulls deep into phase three where tank's position got a little messed up where they were too close to the edge and we couldn't get the melee in front of it. So like I got knocked literally further out into the room and essentially died.
Yeah.
But that, like, it's funny, the movement's really cool. It's not difficult. I mean, the damage here is absolutely ridiculous as a healer. Like it's on tanks, on the raid, on people who end up getting the soaks, on the people soaking. It's just like
a lot of damage in this fight.
The blood prices or princes, whatever they're called, are just
blood prices. So this is really rare. Like oftentimes when raid damage goes out as a tank, it's not super scary. It can be scary if you are also doing something at the same time. Mm-hmm. But because of how hard this boss hits and also how hard the blood price hits, it's actually really spooky. Like if you, like I mentioned that dot that the boss puts on the tanks, if you have high stacks of that when a blood price is happening, you basically need a cooldown to survive it so that you don't get ticked down by the dot during the blood price and then die.
Yeah, I mean that's sort of like, yeah, it's crazy how much damage is in that fight, is in that phase. And then you put that on top of like the two, what we call it, the two big overlaps, right? Which is just massacre plus the soaks.
Yeah.
And like the first time I actually saw it in our raid was like, it looked super hectic. But the funny thing is actually having done it and like understanding the method for what you need to do, it's actually not that big a deal.
The first one is actually,
it's pretty straightforward. It
looks very cool if you're in the melee group, because you basically, one of your tanks like moves the boss around in this loop and it looks like you're constantly going to die because the massacres are spawning under you and you're like, oh my god, I gotta get out of this. Yeah. I gotta go. But massacre takes 3 seconds to hit after a line appears, or like 2.5 seconds.
Yeah.
So you just do this loop and you trust the tank and he takes you over to where the ranged are dropping their finesses and you just walk right through where they were just moments before. And it's very cool. I think it's a very cool moment. The second overlap is actually a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Yeah, because you have to like run through the red stuff and
you have a ravage, a massacre, and shattering pain, which is the knockback, going off at the same time, and then fatal finesse immediately after.
It's like, luckily for me, like I have bubble as a paladin, so I don't know about the knockback, and then I can bop my other healer. So like we were pretty nice, but yeah, that overlap was rough.
I mean, basically what I did is I after baiting the massacre, we waited for the range and they took a gateway over to the other end of the room to get out of it. And then I just like Tiger Slust double roll to the edge of the room, drop a transcendence. And then as soon as the knockback happens to pull me back in, I just hit transcendence and
yeah,
stay where I am. That's awesome. Hopefully there's not a massacre there.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully you don't immediately die.
I definitely died a couple of times to getting pulled back through a massacre while I was in the air and just dying.
Yeah, we had people die to that gating, or not die to massacre gating, but die like gating from one platform to the other as a crescendo goes off and getting hit like mid gate, which is like the weird, yeah, the weirdest stuff. But yeah, yeah. I mean, I think phase three, I don't know if I like the overlaps were definitely not fun. Like I can see progressing it not being fun because there's so much time invested just to like, yeah. See, particularly the last one, right? Because after that last one, there's
I think the second one is the one I would say I was really not a huge fan of. Like, it was fine, and there's definitely some things you can do. Like, we were looking through the different ways, and since it's not a literal immunity that you need, there's actually a lot you can do. Like, Death Knights at Death's Advance, and they don't get knocked back. Warriors can leap after the knockback starts and stay in one place. Paladins can bubble and bop. So we had, like, our paladin bubbled and bopped our shaman, and then our resto druid used the night fae ability to like blink as the knockback came in. Warrior leapt, I transcended moonwalker, sorry to get your hopes up, our windwalker transcended, and then our rogue shadow stepped to the warrior.
Interesting. Nice.
So it's like there's all this stuff you can do, and that actually I think is very cool. I do wish that the massacre were a little bit more reliable about just not randomly screwing you like in the middle of it. Like if the massacre were to start like 3 seconds later, so that the first ones would be hitting, like you would have like a second to move after the knockback went out before the first massacre hit, I think it would have been better.
Yeah. Yeah. That, and I think the other problem is that is so deep in the fight that like you, and it's so like, it's not only deep into the fight, but it's late.
8 minutes, 50 seconds into the fight.
Yeah. So it's like, it is if you get through that with probably 20 people up, even 19 people up, like you kill the boss because there's one more soaks you do. I think it's one more knockback and then the fight's over, right? Like then it's the ravage that for the end of it.
At the end, there's a massacre plus a ravage plus the soaks that you don't do because they're going to explode anyway.
Yeah.
The boss enrages anyway. And on our kill. So our kill is one of the slowest in the world. A very typical kill on this boss is between 10 minutes and 10 minutes and 5 seconds. It's a very narrow band compared to most bosses in the past. We were at 10 minutes and 15 seconds.
Oh, I wonder what our kill was, our first kill.
So there's a little bit of flexibility there because the amount of time you spend in phase one and phase two contributes to it. Because really the clock on the enrage doesn't start ticking until you start phase three.
Right.
So if you take basically the maximum amount of time of both of those, like 10 minutes and 10 seconds is pretty reasonable. And then what happened is everybody died to the stuff exploding.
Okay. With
the mages, two mages in ice blocks, elemental shaman in the like necrolord thing, the forgeborn reveries where they can't die for 10 seconds.
Yep.
And then an assassination rogue with like cloak of shadows up, just going nuts on the boss.
Nice. Our kill was 10 minutes and 12 seconds and ended very similarly with like our DK and necro whatever lord stance, and then our shaman had onked and like threw a flame shock or whatever to kill it. But that second overlap, the really bad one, is it's rough. It's of course, like you said, like you mentioned, it's doable with a bunch of different ways to do it. It's just, it's almost like it's, if the first one was like that, like if the first bad one was like that, I would not have cared as much. Like it would not seem as bad, right? Because you're still fairly early in that phase, at least. It still sucks to get there, but it's difficult enough that if you get through it, you know, there's still maybe one more overlap that can sort of screw you up, and then you get to kill the boss. But yeah, that might be the only knock against it. But I don't know if something being super difficult should really be a negative, right?
I think my main issue with it is just that sometimes you do it and you do it really well and it still kills you because there was a massacre where you like, you know, sometimes, you know, you go out there, like I was going out there, you know, and my transcendence is out there. Sometimes I put it up in advance, sometimes I didn't. But even if I put it up in advance, sometimes in the initial, like, getting pulled back,
Right.
If I hit transcendence, and by the time it realizes it's hit transcendence, I have hit transcendence. If a massacre has hit me by that point, I'm just dead.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that's really tilting, and I would rather that not happen. So that's like, I wish that massacre were a little bit later, to where you still had to do this kind of nonsense so that you could be in a position where you could get out of the massacre.
Right, right.
But then, like, not have the risk of getting yanked through the massacre stuff at that time. But then, if you did that, then, like, you would be, the massacre would still be going on during other beginnings later on, so.
that's fair. I don't know if I have too much else to say in phase three.
Boss, it's real hard.
We had
a real heart to heart with the healers in the melee phase, and we're like, okay, this pull just heal the tanks, like, that's your, I don't care, like, everybody else can die. I don't care. Just heal the tanks. And it turns out it actually was okay for them to put a lot more focus into the tanks because the damage on the rest of the group is actually fairly telegraphed. It's like Fatal Finesse, which you have 6 seconds to top them up before it actually does damage. There's Blood Price. And that's actually like the big two for raid damage that goes, I guess, Shattering Pain. Does raid damage too.
The knockback can be somewhat fatal, but I think it depends. So there's not too much, but yeah, tanks just get screwed, I'll say.
Wish that is one thing I would like it if the damage were more in the big combo that he does and less in the auto attacks.
Okay.
Because really the combo is actually just 4 auto attacks. That's all it is. It's exactly the same damage as an auto attack. It applies the auto attack bleed. And I wish it were just like, you know, kind of like Kill Jaden, Felclaws, where like his regular auto attacks were fine. They were kind of high, but they were fine. And then Felclaws just, bam, beat your face in.
Yeah.
I wish that were what this was like, instead of just being like, oh, it's the same thing, except now he's doing a fancy animation for it.
That's fair. I don't know if I have much more to say about phase three other than like I enjoyed it. Like, I think I enjoyed this boss top to bottom. Although I very much enjoy raiding in this game. So there are very few bosses that I would say I absolutely hated going through.
Yeah.
I think, you know, phase three, very difficult. I think it's a fitting end to the boss too. I'm wondering, is there any other, I put a little section in our notes just about, here's like sort of my highlights of the fight, right? In terms of like what I think it'll end up being remembered for. But I'm wondering, is there sort of anything else you wanted to sort of cover on this one before we get into like final thoughts?
I think one of the real strengths of this fight is that at every point in the fight, there is something to do for every role. Like, this is not an end boss like Nazoth, where for a bunch of Nazoth, there's just nothing for the tanks to do, because you're literally like, the things are in a fixed position and you just got to sit there and wait for them to die. Yeah. The everything in this fight, like the whole time I'm busy with things, I'm doing things as a tank, and that is not every end boss is like that.
Yeah.
And I know the healers have stuff that they're doing, and the damage dealers always have stuff that they're doing. There's damage checks throughout the fight. It's I think that is one of the things that this is going to be remembered for, is like everyone is like, this is a good fight.
Yeah.
There's no role like Jaina. I hate Jaina. Like, I hate that fight so much. And it's 100% because of the tank nonsense trying to position it. And just it being super frustrating. But if you talk to someone who did DPS on that boss or healed that boss, and like, they might love it. Like, I know people that were DPS players on it, and they love the boss.
Yeah.
I do not know a single tank that loved the boss. Anecdotal, but I think that is one thing that stands out to me about this, is that it's just got so much going on for everyone in the raid all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think I agree 100% with that. That, yeah, every role seems to have something important that they are like focused on, or that they are like, they have to do sort of across each of the three phases. Like I've already mentioned, you fall through a hole in the floor, automatically great boss. So yeah, no, I think
you fall through that before he pulls you through it.
No, I didn't. I tried running.
You are a shaman. Like, so when you jump into the center thing before he pulls you through, mm-hmm. it like knocks you back and does some damage.
Yeah.
And I don't know. We had one shaman that managed to multiple times fall through that.
Do you just take fall damage when you hit the bottom? Because yeah. you do if you jump into it, like after, like on our kill, we had people that would basically release back up top and jump through yeah. the middle. And you fall damage. Death. Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting.
I would say he should have been a panda shaman, but you still die.
That's true. So cool. Yeah, no, I think I agree. I think this fight will go down. It's probably one of the, I mean, better fights in general, but definitely one of the better sort of end bosses, right? Yeah. So I had this question, which funnily enough, I always forget that you are fairly new to raiding, but I had the question about like, is this one of the best opening tier end bosses, right? So in terms
better
of
than like, Gahoon,
yeah,
better agreed. Than Zadius, like very little competition there. Gahoon yeah. is like way, Gahoon is one of the best end bosses in BFA, which is not saying very much, but it doesn't even hold a candle to this.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually went through and sort of picked up what I would consider the end bosses for each tier, for each opening tier. It's a little bit more difficult back in like classic. The Kata. Well, the classic was easy, but like in like BC, Wrath, a lot of those, there was like two or three raids at the start, right? That you'd enter into. Right. MOP is actually the only one that I think was an actual legitimate who was the end boss there, whether it's the Grand Empress or Shah of Fear. But honestly, yeah, I agree. I think he's probably one of the best opening tier end bosses. This tier in general, I think, has been one of the better opening tiers. Yeah. But
I think there's too much spell queuing and like push timing nonsense throughout the tier. Like it showed up on Council of Blood, it showed up on Stone Legion Generals, it showed up on Artificer, and a little bit on Denathrius, although for very different reasons. I think Denathrius was mostly fine, but the other three,
yeah,
were not at all fine.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that that was sort of rough. But we've been seeing this whole spell queuing idea sort of manifest itself in various ways.
Some of the worst bosses in BFA were bad because of spell queuing. So.
Yeah, it's definitely not a new concept. So to see him reuse it here, I'm not too. I mean, it sucks. It's not something I'm happy about. But I think it's just a concept that they, as a design team, want to use.
Yeah.
But yeah. In terms of end bosses, like I would say this one probably hits well. It's probably one of the best ones since MOP. Like, I think it's definitely better than, like you said, Gahoon, definitely better than Zavius. I'd say it's a better boss fight than Margok was in WoD, although Margok was actually a very interesting fight to progress on Mythic. And then you get into, like, Grand Empress, Shah, Fear, and MOP, which, I mean, Shah, the bad part about Shah was that it was, like, a 20-minute fight.
Yeah, I've heard the legends.
Yeah, which was rough. But Grand Empress was actually a lot of fun to progress on, so... But yeah, I mean, I think it's probably one of an amazing end tier boss to start off Shadowlands with, and I yeah. think they're hopefully only getting better. I mean, I'm hoping for like an MOP WoD like revival in terms of like raid bosses, because I think a lot of people say those two expansions contain probably some of the best PvE content we've gotten. So
yeah, I would say
it's a good start.
So Stone Legion Generals was by far the worst boss I have done in a long time. Possibly yeah. the worst boss I've ever done. And knowing that Denathrius was next, hearing all of the good things I heard about Denathrius, I was like, okay, I know that when I get through this boss, there is light at the end of this tunnel. There's actually a really good boss after that I want to do.
Yeah.
And it absolutely lived up to that hype. And that was great.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, and I think it's funny that you have a fight like Stone Legion, which will probably go down as the worst fight Blizzard has ever put out, at least that I can remember, right?
Yeah.
At least in its initial implementation. And like you still end up with a tier that I think overall will be positive, right?
Yeah.
Because of, you know, Sire, you know, in particular, but even across the board, I think a lot of the earlier bosses yeah. are solid too.
The only other boss I would say that I really didn't like was Council of Blood.
Yeah, I can get behind that. Although, I mean, to be fair, I actually probably dislike Sun King more. Okay. Only because
you got to play Mistweaver on it.
I know, but it's such a one trick. I don't like healing NPCs. Like it's funny, like Huntsman surprisingly is a fight I don't mind and you have to heal NPCs, but like in general, healing NPCs is just often.
Yeah, I understand. You basically have to single target the boss the whole time. Yeah. And like, you're not a DPS. That's not what you do. Yeah. But I got to play Paladin on it, and I got to sit there spamming Word of Glory for 30 seconds at the start of every phase. And that was actually kind of fun. Just like blasting the healing meters. That was kind of cool.
Nice.
I kind of maybe revive my Paladin because I haven't actually played it since we started extending.
That's funny. That's awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, I think overall, I think the raid was a solid raid. I think it was a good end cap and a good start. I mean, you know, just end boss wise or just raid tier wise. So, oh, what's the new one called? It's like
something. Oh, I don't even know, dude. I don't know.
The Domination. Anyway. Yeah. Anyway.
The patch is called Chains of Domination. I don't know if we know the name of the raid yet. I think we probably do, but I don't remember what it is.
Anyway.
But you know what? We will find that out next week when the PTR opens and we get the new dungeon journal and.
You're on the PTR list, right? Like you're gonna get PTR.
Everybody gets PTR and
I gotta ask the question, Emilson. Yeah, I gotta ask
PTR
it.
And
I gotta ask it.
If PTR comes out and I can't get on PTR, I'm actually like calling. Like I'm gonna call Bob Blizzard and I'm go, hey, where's my PTR access, asshole?
That's so funny. That's so funny. Awesome. So now, I mean. I guess my final thought here is, what do we do for 4 months now, or 3 months, or however it is?
I'm going to quote an absolute legend. I'm going to say, now we play the game.
Yeah, it's true. God. Yeah, now it's like farming, selling, all that type of stuff. But yeah, it'll be...
Not all of farm, but I'm going to play a DPS, just a DPS for some of
nice.
Farm. Yeah, I've decided that is like, I don't care what else happens, I'm going to do it for part of farm. And it's probably going to be my warlock. I've been having a lot of fun on that. It still needs more gear because it's only like I level 202 or whatever. But
nice.
Getting there. Nobody accepts warlocks to keys. It's actually a pain in the ass. But
that's funny.
It's getting there.
Nice. Yeah. And it's funny. I will probably also play some Mystic or probably some Shaman. It'll be like one of the first tiers that we're done early enough and that. The grind for your character isn't bad enough that we'll have some ults. Yeah, so.
I've been so... I cannot say this enough. I've been so happy with how the ults catch-up has worked.
Yeah, and surprisingly, like Solash, like, Solash I thought that was going to be... Yeah, it was going to be a bigger deal than it was. So
I have been in the camp from the start that it actually wasn't going to be a big deal because if you're playing an alt, you really only need one legendary anyway.
Yeah.
Like, if you play a lot and you want to have multiple legendaries, then... I understand that kind of sucks, but like I have a rank 3 legendary right now on my warlock. I've been playing it for 3 weeks because that's how the numbers work out, and I will have my rank 4 next week, and that's totally fine. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, and Torghast isn't too terrible now that they've done that account wide stuff where it's literally like your 2 runs a week, so you don't have to grind your way back up, which is
that is actually something that was a huge pain doing the Torghast grind on 2 characters at the start of the expansion, just doing like the week that the 8s came out, you know, we had to do what, 6 runs?
Yeah.
Plus the weekly run for the quest from Bolvar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is definitely rough. So well, cool. I mean, I think we'll have to figure out what we're gonna talk about. Luckily PTR is next week. Maybe we have a topic
PTR.
There. But yeah, we'll have some fun. So all right, well, I think that wraps it up for Sire overall. Good boss tier in general, good tier. Yeah. So a couple of low lights, some very low lights in Stone Legion, but I think in general the tier was good.
Oh, you guys killed Stone Legion again. I mean, obviously you killed Stone Legion again this week. How was it?
It was fine. I mean, it was a joke. I mean, it's not hard. It's literally just boring. Like, it's just like whole DPS.
I'm okay with that.
But that's the point. When I was joking earlier, I was like, Stone Legion so long, I forgot when to use my abilities. I literally forgot when to use my ability. Like, I forgot when AM was because, like, we had, like, it's just one of those things where, like, when you're doing it over and over again, you're like, here's when I do it. And then we took, like, almost a week off from it. And I was like, shit, like, I'll just hit this stuff randomly and it works. So the nerfs help for sure. Like, the wind nerf is huge. The healing reduction one, it still sucks, but it's not 100%, so you can still kind of save people when they get low. So no, it is what it is. We wiped like maybe once or twice, honestly, just people being idiots and picking up every orb at once and just like he can't dunk forearms at the same time. So, you know, we lost it there, but
faster five head.
Yeah, no, I think we wiped like maybe three times through it this week. And so it wasn't too bad. So yeah, Stone Legion and it just sucks. It's boring. It's not hard. It's just like, they've made it easy enough now that you just sort of roll through it. So,
yep.
But cool. So I think that is it. So now we get into my favorite part of the show, which is, of course, the end of it. No, I'm kidding. It's Q&A.
Damn.
I'm just kidding. I love my Saturday nights. So it's Q&A time, which, of course, is actually my favorite part of the fight. So you can send your questions to Emelson or myself, and we will answer them on air. They don't have to be WoW-related at all. You can just ask us anything. We'll pretty much answer most things. There are certain things that are off limits. You don't know what those are. We don't know what those are. But I think at this point, we've been doing this for, 35 episodes? Give or take, and we've only not answered maybe one question that we've received. So so first up tonight is our good friend Blazeroo, as I like to refer to them as. I believe their actual name is Anzaru. And they ask, it's a simple question. We'll give a simple answer. Classic Star Trek or Doctor Who? So I don't have
any like bold opinions about this one.
So I will tell you that. So when we talked about Star Trek last week, do you remember what I said? I'd never watched it.
Yeah. Did you go and watch Star Trek this week?
No, I did not. I did this. Oh, okay. I built. So if you guys can see behind me, there's a Star Destroyer from Star Wars, the better sci-fi series. It's made of Lego. Anyway, no, I'm kidding. I didn't watch Star Trek, and I literally. So this is going to seem blasphemous. I have never seen an episode of Doctor Who. I know what Doctor Who is. I know that
I hadn't seen any until a couple years ago, so it's not that outrageous.
But I've still not seen them. Like I've been through friends' hype of it. I know that he goes into a telephone booth, and that telephone booth changes him to Superman or something. But like I don't, and I know there was a big controversy. Wasn't the Doctor a female? Like the last Doctor was a female, and there was like a big controversy about that. I know one of the actresses, Jenna Louise Coleman, which was one of the Doctor's assistants. She's a fairly attractive individual. I've seen pictures of her. I know that she was in the show. It's literally all I know about the show. So I have no opinion here, is I think of what I'm getting at.
So I would say that Doctor Who's Monster of the Week is more eminently like watchable. It's easier to just put it on and you know what you're getting into every time, basically, because it's virtually always Monster of the Week. They very rarely do these longer arcs that still frequently include a bunch of Monster of the Week stuff. It's just the Monster of the Week as part of a bigger arc.
So it's like Power Rangers.
Yeah, Power Rangers, except with less punching.
And only one powerful person versus five.
Yeah.
And no Megatrons.
Sometimes he's got buddies that help out.
Nice. I get behind that. I can watch Doctor Who then. I liked Power Rangers.
And Star Trek, like, I haven't, and I guess for clarity, I have not seen very much classic Star Trek. I have not seen any classic Doctor Who, only the newer stuff. So this may not be accurate for the older Doctor Who stuff. And the classic Star Trek stuff, I think it some of it holds up just fine and is actually perfectly watchable too. There's just, I don't know, more variants.
That's fair.
And there's a wider variety of things that like a Star Trek episode could be. Like some of them are like bordering on action. Some of them are more like mystery-ish, I guess. Like there's just a wider breadth of things. So it's, again, I'm a little bit just saying like, they're different things. But also like if you just want to put on a show and not have to think too much about what show you're putting on, Doctor Who is very consistent. Star Trek, if you don't like care about the kind of thing, you just want to watch something, Star Trek gives you a bit of variety.
Fair enough.
And it's not like there's no variety in Doctor Who. It's just like a lot lower breadth of different kinds of shows.
Yeah, like there's the bad guy who makes the monster out of clay and then sends it down from the moon and makes it big on Earth. And then the power doctors come out and kill it in their Megatrons, right? Like that's what that's about. Yeah. Okay, got it. I'm good.
You know, for a second there, I actually was wondering if you were describing a Doctor Who episode. I don't know of any that follow that specific plot line, especially not the mechatrons at the end or whatever. But
okay, to be fair, it's funny that I'm saying
I had to do a double take on whether it was actually the actual.
Yeah, no, I have no idea. Oh, anyway, Blazer, thank you very much for the question. Maybe not any more classic sci-fi, because I think Emilson and I are out of our depth now. All right, so next up comes from Hursty. And they, of course, asked Hursty of, you know, peak of Serenity fame, awesome individual. They used to have their entire server name and their freaking username. It's awful to try and say. Whatever. God, it's awful. So Hursty asks, what do you guys think about daylight savings time in general, and should it stay or be removed, and why?
Kill it with fire.
Yeah, I mean, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, it's kind of cool, but like, I don't, for me, like the funny thing is, like, for me particularly, I hate it in my job more than anything, because I work with a lot of people who do not live in the United States. Most of the people I work with live in Europe or live in like India, Asia area, right? Like my company's pretty big. And it sucks for the 2 weeks where our time, like particularly with Europe, it sucks because there's 2 weeks where we're off.
Yeah.
And then we line up again. So it's
daylight savings time apply, but EU countries have not had daylight savings time apply yet. So for the 2 week period, the number of hours difference is different.
Right. Which sucks. Like, at least with, like, it's funny with, like, Asia and sort of India, who generally, I don't know if India observes daylight savings time. I know that it's particularly China does not. It's okay because I'll adjust my, like, I'll know it's coming. I know I'll have to go talk to them. But for the EU, it's like, dude, for 2 weeks, like, I got to be with you. Like, I got to get up. You got to get up earlier. I got to get up early. Like, something's got to happen because, like, one of our calendars are changing because I'm not moving this meeting for literally 2 weeks. So. Yeah, I hate it. Like, if it wasn't for work, I probably wouldn't care either way. But because of my job, I absolutely hate it. It just sucks.
I actually have had like a litany of time zone / daylight savings times related issues at work this past week.
Yeah.
And it's all totally avoidable stuff if the people that designed how insurance reporting works didn't insist that you just report the date. Like, if we just had to report, you know, the date and time in UTC, then it would be easy and we wouldn't have had any issues. But because it has to be in like the local time zone,
good luck.
Some things are getting reported a day off, which is obviously not very good.
Yeah. God. Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely kill it. I don't think it. I mean, maybe it still serves a purpose. I don't know. I mean, I don't truly understand the origins. I've always heard it's like a farming thing. But like,
pretty sure that origin is bullshit, but I'm not, I don't have a source for that.
Yeah. Neither do I. That's all what it was always told. Like when I grew up, that was sort of the prevailing reason, but I mean, I have no clue. So whatever. But yeah, Hursty, kill it. I'm done with it. Just get rid of it. Let's everybody be Arizona. So, so thank you. Also, thank you for the question. So our final question comes from, again, Mr. or Mrs. or they, however you know, whatever you want to identify as, Blazeroo, aka Anzaroo. Blazer. I like Blazeroo better. We have a WoW relevant question. Thank you. What tools/resources outside of the game do you find most useful and why? For a raider, example, raid bots or a mythic trap. For raid leader, example, raidplan.io, an officer team, WoW audit, wipe vest, et cetera, et cetera. I love this question, by the way. So, Emilson, do you want to take it first, or me, or who?
As someone that does strategy stuff for our raid, not like I do all the strat, but I help with it, raidplan.io is absolutely the top of my list. Like, it's probably number two besides Warcraft logs, which is obviously the number one spot because there is nothing even close to Warcraft logs in importance.
Yeah.
Raiding. Raid bots could go away tomorrow and it would really, really suck. But if Warcraft logs goes away, I'm quitting raiding. I'm just done.
That's funny. Yeah, no, for sure. Definitely, yeah, raid, definitely. I would say that for me in particular, like Wipefest is huge. Just because Wipefest is very easy to pull healing cooldowns.
Okay.
Okay. So like looking at rates. Yeah. So it's very easy to literally like copy. You can actually copy and paste that into an Excel spreadsheet, by the way, and then replace names and then put it into ERT note and you're pretty good. So I think, you know, Whitefest to me is probably one of the best ones. Let me see if I can find it real quick. There is another tool that I use a lot to actually do ERT notes, because you can do them offline and then
I need this.
And then just to copy and paste them in. I used it first. Hold on, I'm trying to find it. Where did I put it? Did I put it in Stone Legion? Maybe it was Council. Hold on, sorry. But I built this whole, oh yeah, it's called, here it is. It's like ertnotes.herokuapp.com or ert-notes.herokuapp.com. Essentially,
I'll put it up on stream.
Yeah, let me pull this over. This is what I did for our, actually, it's for our council kill. It's our council kill notes. But what it does is you basically, on the left-hand side of the screen, you build the ERT note how you want it. So you can like add in like spell occurrences snippets, you can add in spell IDs, essentially do it, you know, add in your team members and the colors associated to them, right? Which is very, very cool. And the right-hand side, it just gives you the ERT string to copy in. So essentially you can build how it looks on the left-hand side and then import it directly into ERT. Is.
Oh my God, I'm sending this to her. I'm actually sending this to dealer lead right now.
And you can set it up, like you can add players, so you can always have the same sort of default template or like an empty template. So once you build your first one, I'd add all of like our players and their classes, right? So like all the names I had to add manually. But once you get it set up, it's like super simple to take this and for the next fight, do the next timings and things like that. So I don't know if it supports the new like timer function in ERT notes, if you guys utilize that, but at least to get you a basic note that has some colors in it and, you know, isn't too terrible to format. I love it. So that would be the only one outside of what you mentioned, like Wipefest definitely being the main one. We don't use raidplan.io too much, which is interesting for us.
Really? Do you just use like MS Paint? Like that's what our new current raid leader does, is a lot of MS Paint, which is like, it works. I like raidplan.io. I use it a lot for my personal notes as well. I have a notebook that I do a lot of that in, that I draw in. But also for things like where I need to communicate, you know, what's our positioning on Denathrius, for example, with my Kotank, like raidplan.io is coming out and I'm doing it there.
Yeah, it's funny. We actually do a lot of pictures of stuff. And then apparently for Sludgefist, we stole occasional excellences, gifts of Sludgefist part one and part two.
Yeah, Schlim. Oh, man.
We do a lot of videos.
That's Schlim, who raids on the weekday team in our guild, did those, and they are phenomenal. He's done them for a bunch of bosses. Denathrius, I think the movement in phase two and phase three ended up just being like just too complicated to really do in the GIFs. Yeah. I think he's working on it, but he did not get it done before we killed the boss. So
that's funny. But yeah, so I think Blazeroo, I think you nailed a lot of them, but I think from like just personal perspective, like Wipefest is huge just for healing and cooldowns. Being able to copy and paste those out makes it super simple to find a raid comp similar to yours, kill timing similar to yours, or you know, at least estimated kill timing similar to yours, and sort of pull those out. And then yeah, this ERT note app is like super easy to like build stuff offline and then drop it into ERT very quickly. So along with all the other stuff, like we use WoW Audit still for like loot needs, and our officers sort of use that. Like I use it somewhat with healers to like kind of set up comps, but for the most part, we just tell each other if we're in or out, right, for each fight.
Yeah. We've got a spreadsheet that we use for that. Like Google Sheets, very flexible tool.
Yeah. Yeah. So cool. Well, Blazer, thanks for the question. Not too much out of what you noticed. I think a lot of the big ones are there.
This ERT note one is very cool. Very cool. And I did not know about that before. So,
I forget who gave it to me. Somebody, I think actually one of our officers did. So, but yeah. I think that's it. I think that's it for questions too.
I think that's it for questions. I think that means it is it for the show. So next week, obviously, we are going to be talking about the 9.1 PTR, assuming it comes out. If it doesn't, we will scrounge around for topics and we will be back at 8:30-ish Eastern.
Someone doesn't have another meeting that makes them late.
Ugh. Hey man, we killed Denathrius last night. We had to have a jet.
That's true.
But yeah. Thank you all for listening, whether it has been, you know, coming and hanging out in the stream and chatting with us or listening to the audio version of this. We really appreciate it. If you would like to support this show and all of the other work that goes on over at the Peak of Serenity, you can do that over on our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. And doing that not only supports this show and the theory crafting guide writing on Peak of Serenity, but it also gives you access to special role in a channel or more than one channel. I don't remember off the top of my head. And Babylonius's patron only D&D campaign for Peak of Serenity, which I have a choice quote from the donors channel about this. This is from Kiev. I'm about to go hunt all of you down individually until you join the Peak D&D campaign, by the way.
Jesus. It's aggressive.
Aggressive. But it's fun. It's fun. Anyway, thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.